And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is May 25th. The war still rages in Ukraine. Russia's still getting worst of the deal. We have something new out of the mysterious East. It's called monkeypox, which may or may not be a major pandemic-type situation. We've got the naysayers, and we've got the chicken little types that are running around talking about the skies falling. We had another shooting in Uvalde, Texas. And, of course, our illustrious leader starts talking about deer wearing Kevlar. And we should just disarm and open the borders and tell them to come on and take what you want. That's what it's eventually going to wind up being, knowing the folks that are trying to run this thing. Well, as I say, it's May 25th. On this day in 567 B.C., Servius Tullius, the king of Rome, celebrates a triumph for his victory over the Etruscans. 240 B.C., first recorded perihelion passage of Halley's Comet. In 1085, Alfonso VI of Castile takes Toledo, Spain, back from the Moors. At one point, the Iberian Peninsula was basically Muslim. Henry the Navigator is appointed governor of the Order of Christ. Now, those that are not familiar with the Order of Christ, it was actually the military Order of Christ. The former Knights Templar Order was reconstituted in Portugal after the Templars were abolished by the Pope in 1312. Pope Clement V did it at the request of Philip the Fair, the King of France, who destroyed the Templars in order to try to get their treasure. Of course, overnight, the entire Templar treasure vanished, along with their fleet, never seen again. 1521, the Diet of Worms ends when Charles V, Holy Roman Emperor, issues the Edict of Worms, declaring Martin Luther an outlaw. 1644, Ming General Wu Sangui forms an alliance with the invading Manchus and opens the gates of the Great Wall of China at Shanhaiguan Pass, letting the Manchus through so that they could march on the capital of Beijing. The Great Wall of China was set up to stop things like that from happening. 1659, Richard Cromwell resigns as Lord Protector of England following the restoration of the Long Parliament, beginning a second brief period of the Republican government called the Commonwealth of England. I think that was before Charles II came back and took over. 1660, Charles II lands at Dover at the invitation of the Convention Parliament, which marks the end of the Cromwell-proclaimed Commonwealth of England, Scotland, and Ireland and begins a restoration of the British monarchy. 1738, a treaty between Pennsylvania and Maryland ends the Conojocular War with settlement of a boundary dispute and exchange of prisoners. 1787, after a delay of 11 days, a U.S. Constitutional Convention formally convenes in Philadelphia after a quorum of seven states is secured. 1798, United Irishmen Rebellion. The Battle of Carlow begins. Executions of suspected rebels at Carnew and at Dunlavin Green take place. 1809, Chuquisaca Revolution. Patriot Revolt in modern-day Sucre against the Spanish Empire, sparking the Latin American Wars of Independence. 1810, May Revolution. Citizens of Buenos Aires expel Viceroy Balthazar Hidalgo de Cisneros during the May week, starting the Argentine War of Independence. 1819, Argentine Constitution of 1819 is promulgated. 1833. The Chilean Constitution of 1833 is promulgated. 1865 in Mobile, Alabama. Around 300 are killed when the ordnance depot explodes. 1878, Gilbert and Sullivan's comic opera HMS Pinafore opens at the Opera Comique in London. 1895, playwright, poet, novelist Oscar Wilde is convicted of committing acts of gross indecency with other male persons and sentenced to 2 years in prison. He was, the acts of gross indecency are said by many to have been sodomy. He was known to be homosexual. And frankly, my attitude is, I don't care if you get it done with a turnip. Just leave me alone. But unfortunately, there are those who know better than you do what you should do in your bedroom. There's always going to be those type. 1895, Republic of Formosa is formed with Tang Jinsong as its president. 1914, the House of Commons of the UK passes the Home Rule Bill for devolution in Ireland. 1925, the Scopes trial. John T. Scopes is indicted for teaching human evolution in Tennessee. 1926, Shalom Schwartzbard assassinates Simon Petlura, the head of the government of the Ukrainian People's Republic, which is actually a government in exile in Paris. 1935, Jesse Owens of Ohio State University breaks three world records and ties a fourth at the Big Ten Conference Track and Field Championship in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He also, at the Olympics that took place in Nazi Germany, upset Adolf terribly. 1938, Spanish Civil War, bombing of Alicante kills 313 people. 1940, World War II, the German 2nd Panzer Division captures the port of Boulogne-sur-Mer, or Boulogne-sur-Mer. Surrender of the last French and British troops marked the end of the Battle of Boulogne. 1946, the Parliament of Transjordan makes Abdullah I of Jordan their emir. 1953, nuclear weapons testing. At the Nevada test site, the U.S. conducts its first and only nuclear artillery test. 1953, the first public television station in the U.S. officially begins broadcasting as KUHT from the campus of the University of Houston. 1955, in the U.S., a nighttime F5 tornado strikes the small city of Udell, Kansas, killing 80 and injuring 273. Deadliest tornado to ever occur in the state and the 23rd deadliest in the U.S. In 1955, first ascent of Mount Kanchenjunga on the British Kanchenjunga expedition led by Charles Evans, Joe Brown, and George Bann reached the summit of the third highest mountain in the world, 8,586 meters. Norman Hardy and Tony Strouther joined them the next day. 1961, Apollo program. President Kennedy announces before a special joint session of Congress his goal to initiate a project to put a man on the moon before the end of the decade. 1963, the Organization of African Unity is established in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. 1966, Explorer Program. Explorer 32 is launched. 1968, the Gateway Arch in St. Louis is dedicated. 1973, in protest against the dictatorship in Greece, the captain and crew on the Greek naval destroyer Velos mutiny and refused to return to Greece. Instead, they anchor at Fiumicino, Italy. 1977, Star Wars, retroactively called Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, is released in theaters. 1977, the Chinese government removes a decade-old ban on William Shakespeare's work, effectively ending the Cultural Revolution that started in 1966, which was a major disaster for the country. 1978, first in a series of bombings orchestrated by the Unabomber, detonates at Northwestern University, resulting in minor injuries. 1979, John Spinkelink, a convicted murderer, is executed in Florida, first person to be executed in the state after the reintroduction of capital punishment in 1976. 1979, American Airlines Flight 191, a McDonnell Douglas DC-10, crashes during takeoff at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago, killed all 271 on board and two people on the ground. It's a bad day when somebody on the ground gets hit by a falling plane. In Riyadh, the Gulf Cooperation Council was created between Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. 1982, Falklands War. HMS Coventry is sunk by Argentine Air Force A-4 Skyhawks. 1985, Bangladesh is hit by a tropical cyclone and a storm surge. About 10,000 people are killed. 1986, Hands Across America event takes place. 1997, a military coup in Sierra Leone replaces President Ahmad Tejan Cabal with Major John Paul Coromo. 1999, U.S. House of Representatives releases the Cox Report that details China's nuclear espionage against the U.S. over the previous 20 years. 2000, Liberation Day of Lebanon. Israel withdraws its army from Lebanese territory with the exception of the disputed Sheba Farm Zone, 18 years after the invasion that took place in 1982. 2001, Eric Weyenmayer becomes the first blind person to reach the summit of Mount Everest in the Himalayas. He went with Dr. Sherman Bull. 2002, China Airlines Flight 611 disintegrates in midair and crashes into the Taiwan Strait with the loss of all 225 people on board. 2008, NASA's Phoenix lander touches down in the Green Valley region of Mars to search for environments suitable for water and microbial life. And I think they found it. 2009, North Korea allegedly tests its second nuclear device, after which Pyongyang also conducts several missile tests, building tensions in the international community. 2011, Oprah Winfrey airs her last show, ending her 25-year run of the Oprah Winfrey Show. 2012, the SpaceX Dragon becomes the first commercial spacecraft successfully rendezvous and berth with the International Space Station. 2013, suspected Maoist rebels kill at least 28 and injure 32 others in an attack on a convoy of the Indian National Congress politicians in Chhattisgarh, India. 2013, a gas cylinder explodes on a school bus in the Pakistani city of Gujarat, kill at least 18. 2018, the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, becomes enforceable in the European Union. 2018, Ireland votes to repeal the Eighth Amendment of their constitution that prohibits abortion in all but a few cases, choosing to replace it with the 36th Amendment of the Constitution of Ireland. Looks like everybody wants to kill babies. And in 2020, George Floyd, an African-American citizen, is murdered in Minneapolis, Minnesota during an arrest when he's forced into a prone position face down on the ground for more than 9 minutes, provoking protests across the U.S. and around the world. They're wanting to literally make a god out of him, even though he is, or was, a convicted criminal. But that's okay. A lot of births and deaths on this state in history. Holidays and observances: Africa Day in the African Union, African Liberation Day in the African Union and Rastafari, Christian Feast Day, Aldhelm, Fidi, Canius, Dionysus of Milan, Dunched Maxen Phelan, Gerard of Lunel, Madeline Sophie Barat, Mary Magdalene de Pazzi, Maximus of Evreux, Pope Boniface IV, Pope Gregory VII, Pope Urban I, Zenobius of Florence, First National Government National Day in Argentina, Greek Pride Day in the Greek culture, Independence Day celebrates independence of Jordan from the UK in 1946, The Last Bell in Russian post-Soviet countries, Liberation Day in Lebanon, International Missing Children's Day, National Missing Children's Day in the U.S., National Tap Dance Day in the U.S., and Towel Day in honor of the work of the writer Douglas Adams. Alrighty, let's see what else we have. Okay, in 1085, Alfonso VI of Leon and Castile captures the Muslim Taifa of Toledo. 1241 was the first attack on the Jewish community of Frankfurt am Main in Germany. In 1522, the Holy Roman Emperor Charles V returns to Spain. In 1571, Pope Pius V forms the Holy League to fight the Ottomans with other Catholic maritime states, including Spain, Venice, Naples, and Sicily. 1632, Albrecht von Wallenstein recaptures Prague on the Saxon. In 1659, Richard Cromwell resigns as Lord Protector of England, as I said, which got him the nickname of Tumble Down Dick. In 1761, Great Britain and the Holy Roman Empire signed the Treaty of Westminster, which was the Defensive Pact. 1720, the ship Le Grand Saint-Antoine reaches Marseille, bringing Europe's last major plague outbreak. About 100,000 people died as a result. 1721, John Copson becomes America's first insurance agent. 1787, the Constitutional Convention opens at Philadelphia. George Washington presides. 1793, Father Stephen Theodore Biden is the first U.S. Roman Catholic priest ordained. 1810, the Primera Junta, or local government, is established in Argentina. 1816, a collection of poems by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, I can't talk, published by John Murray in London, includes Kubla Khan and Christabel. 1826, the American Unitarian Association is founded. 1837, the Patriots of Lower Canada, primarily Quebec, rebelled against the British, wanting independence. 1842, physicist Christian Doppler presents his idea, now known as the Doppler effect, to the Royal Bohemian Society in Prague. 1844, the first telegraph news dispatch is published in Baltimore, in the Baltimore Patriot. 1861, John Merryman is arrested under suspension of the writ of habeas corpus, which sparks a Supreme Court decision protecting the writ. Lincoln also did away with it. 1862, the first battle of Winchester, Virginia. Stonewall Jackson's Confederate forces achieved a major victory. You know, the war might have ended differently had his own men not shot him. 1864, Battle of New Hope Church. Sherman's Major William T. Sherman. Yeah, I think I wrote that wrong. Confederate forces attacked Sherman's troops. And there were heavy losses, and both sides dug in. 1870, Irish Fenians raid Eccles Hill in Quebec. In 1887, a gas lamp at the Paris Opera caught fire. 200 people died. All right, 1900, retired London firemaster Harry Massey Shaw, who was 70, became the oldest gold medalist in the Olympics in sailing. Of course, that was disputed. 1911, a revolution in Mexico overthrew president for life, Jose Porfirio Diaz. 1927, Henry Ford announced he's ending production of the Model T Ford. All right. 1936, the Remington Rand strike led by the American Federation of Labor begins. 1941, 5,000 drowned in a storm at Ganges Delta region in India. 1943, there's a riot at the Mobile, Alabama shipyard over the upgrading of 12 black workers. 43, the Trident Conference took place in Washington, D.C. They planned what was going to be done in 1943 against Japan. Also in 43, Agnes Moorehead, who played Endora on Bewitched, appeared in Sorry Wrong Number on the radio program Suspense. That was said to be her most successful appearance. 1944, partisan leader Josip Broz Tito, who became president of Yugoslavia, and he was a revolutionary, escaped the Germans who surrounded Bosnia. 1945, Arthur C. Clarke, science fiction writer and scientist, proposed relay satellites in geosynchronous orbit. 1946, Jordan gets independence from Britain. Abdullah Ibn Hussein becomes King of Jordan. 1948, Polish war hero Witold Pilecki is executed by communist police after a show trial in Warsaw. 1949, the Chinese Red Army occupies Shanghai. 1959, Russian Premier Nikita Khrushchev visited Angola. He's the man that banged his shoe on a table at the UN and said, "We will bury you." I think he got buried first. 1961, NASA civilian pilot Joseph Walker took the F-15 to 32,770 miles from the surface of the planet. Alrighty. 1964, the Supreme Court ruled closing schools to avoid desegregation is unconstitutional. Let's see, is there anything else worth mentioning? In 69, the Sudanese government was overthrown in a military coup, but somebody's always doing a coup or wanting to do a coup, or they just did a coup. All right, and for those that are into daytime or sitcoms, 1977, on this date, the Brady Bunch last aired on ABC TV. All righty. You know, we were talking yesterday about folks with what amounts to supernatural powers. And I've seen a lot of folks do a lot of very bizarre things. I saw some psychic surgery when I was in South America. Of course, they didn't let anybody get up to the table to see if there was any sleight of hand going on, but the individual in question, the patient, swore that he felt the man's hand go into him. And, you know, something I've actually experimented with myself, which is the pendulum dousing, is, I made mention yesterday of the fact my parents owned a motel in Florida, and a gypsy family rented one of the cottages. And the young lady, the daughter of the gypsy couple, was quite an effective medium herself. And she did a lot of fortune telling using plain old ordinary deck of cards. Now, some folks swear by tarot cards, and I've seen those demonstrated. I used to have all kinds of mediums and would-be mediums and on my show, because I've had a show in one form or another for over 30 years. And there's one gentleman who was so accurate. He was actually scary. And he was doing a reading for a lady at a psychic fair here in town. And he said, "You're going to have a wreck on the way home." And she laughed at him because she wasn't driving. Well, a friend of hers that was driving, I don't remember all the ramifications, but she wound up not being able to drive. So the woman that got the reading drove and had a wreck on the way home. Everything the psychic told her took place. And she came back and just had an absolute cow. That he shouldn't be allowed to be out. That something he did caused the wreck and yada, 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 yada. And I had over almost 35 years ago, I was looking at getting married again, and the young lady in question was a little character, and we had some friends. One of the wife was a medium. And she walked up and she said, "You're not going to marry her. In a year or two, you're going to meet the one you will marry." And then she proceeded to describe the woman I did marry. And everything she said was accurate. There are people who do have those abilities. No question about it. The problem is how to channel and make use of those abilities. The some of the most prolific psychics and mediums I've ever met. And like anybody else, it's a talent. And you have good days and bad days. As one of them said to me, there are days when he's not really in the groove, so to speak, when he can't tell you what time it is, he's got a watch on his arm. Other times, he can tell you what's going to happen. At any point in time, you want to mention the time, he can tell you what's going to happen at that point in time. Well, you know, of all the instruments, now let's call the unbelievable abilities the result of what we'll call the X-Force. And of all the instruments ever devised to harness the X-Force, none has ever been as complex as what's called the black box, either in its physical constrictions or in the theories and practices of those who use it. Now, I know your first question is going to be, what's the black box? And that's a question easier to ask than it is to answer. Now, there's been a number of researchers who spent a lot of years of patient research trying to formulate an answer that would be comprehensible not only to himself, but to the general public. Still hadn't arrived at the proper answer. At the conclusion of a sensational trial in the Queen's Bench Division of the British High Court of Justice, which occupied the court's attention for two long weeks in summer 1960, the black box, which played a part, was still a mystery. The judge admitted he couldn't make head nor tail of it, but he did allow that there's a great body of opinion that it was impossible to ignore. And he found conclusively in favor the sincerity and the integrity of the box's principal modern protagonist, George DeLoir of the Delaware Laboratories in the city of Oxford. Now, the story of the black box began in San Francisco back about 1940 with an American doctor by the name of Albert Abrams. Now, there are those that called him a charlatan and those that said he was real. But there are two reasons for believing he wasn't a charlatan. First, he was extremely rich and had no temptation to deviate from the path of peer research. And second, his medical record was of exceptional brilliance, not only in America, but in Europe. He graduated from Heidelberg with first-class honors as an MA and an MD with the gold medal of the university. Now, the birth of what became known as the box, like penicillin, was the result of an accident. And if you want to delve more into the box, read the book Radionics by J.O. Wilcox. One day, Abrams was conducting a clinical examination of a patient that involved percussing the abdomen. And during this examination, his assistant happened to switch on an X-ray apparatus standing a few feet away. At that moment, the percussion note, which had previously been resonant, as he said, like a sound in an echo chamber of a movie studio, went flat and dead. And this, of course, intrigued Abrams, and so much he persuaded the patient to take part in an experiment by changing his position in relation to the machine. A few minutes later, he made another startling discovery. The percussion note only went dead when the patient stood facing east or west. It didn't occur when he faced north or south. Now, you have to keep in mind, while this was earth-shaking from one point of view, Mesmer, 150 years before, had said the human body has polarity. To suggest this was the birth of the box is a sort of a gross oversimplification, but at least it confirmed Abrams in some of the fundamental ideas without which the box might not have come into existence. One of these was that the basis of disease might be electronic rather than molecular or cellular. To put it another way, Abrams believed that a disease condition would not only affect tissues at the cellular level, but would also entail changes in the electronic constitution of the atoms, which were the basic constituents of the molecules that compose the body's cells. He also believed that such electronic changes would be bound to cause a variation in the radiations emitted by the affected tissue, and it would be possible to detect these instrumentally if only a sufficiently sensitive instrument could be devised. Well, the box began as a metallic disc suspended by an assistant who had also held a specimen of diseased tissue while at the same time Abrams percussed the patient's stomach. From this point, it developed into a fairly simple piece of electrical apparatus provided with a calibrated dial. By adjusting the dial, after much trial and error, he discovered that there were certain definite rates of radiation from every disease that could be fixed and established by numbers on the dial. Thus, supposing his experiments had taught him to associate the disease of diabetes, for example, to number 12, and supposing he suspected the patient had this disease, he could set the dial to 12, contact the patient's stomach with the disc on his apparatus, and begin the process of percussion. If there was a reaction, he concluded either that the patient was diabetic or they had a tendency toward diabetes. For one of the most remarkable mysteries of the box was that it appeared to be able to detect the presence of certain diseases before they actually developed. In other words, the box almost was able to predict which disease it would appear. But the greatest mystery of all was the fact that although Abrams was using a piece of electrical equipment, he was not dealing with an electrical phenomena as such. There's no such thing as a live circuit in the ordinary electrical sense. According to Mr. Wilcox, the radiations, for want of a better term, which he was by this means able to detect and identify, were something quite unknown in classical science. It wasn't electricity that was being dealt with. Once again, we come back to the mysterious X-Force, which is basically another oversimplification, because as we study the later developments of the box and the philosophy of its exponents, we find that the thought of the person using it plays a vital part in the efficiency of its operations. In fact, you may later come to the conclusion that even the most elaborate boxes of the present decade are only instruments of increasing delicacy and complexity for reinforcing and pinpointing the power of pure thought. Basically, the box is used to diagnose. And what does it base its diagnosis on? This mysterious force. There's no way to define what the force is. It's just there. Now, before you dismiss this whole thing as a bunch of nonsense, let's talk about a historical fact that may give pause to even the most orthodox member of the medical profession, if he weren't previously aware of it. In the early 20s, Abrams brought his box to England with regrettable results. Instead of being seriously considered by the medical profession, it became a Mayfair talking point. The doctors were at length compelled to acknowledge its existence, if only because so many of their rich and fashionable patients were demanding to know more about it. So in the summer of 1924, a committee of the British Medical Association was appointed to investigate the claims about the box. Under the chairmanship of Sir Thomas Horder, now, no more respectable board of inquiry could be imagined than this one. The British Medical Association was and still is, as far as I know, one of the most staunchly entrenched fortresses of orthodoxy in Europe, and Sir Thomas himself was chief physician to His Majesty King George V. If you want a blue ribbon panel, it doesn't get any bluer than this. The box, it was confidently expected to be swiftly disposed, as the fraud it undoubtedly was, in the opinion of the great majority of the Hartley Street pundits. Unfortunately for those gentlemen, the box refused to be dismissed so lightly. It came out of the investigation with flying colors. In fact, one of the many accounts reported that tests had been arranged under suitable supervision. Results had been carefully evaluated, and the committee had come to the conclusion that no more convincing exposition of the reality of the phenomena could reasonably be desired. Not merely was it satisfied that the claims about the diagnostic value of the method were proven, two of its members, Sir Thomas Horder being one, had actually felt an alteration in their abdominal muscles at the time when, if the therapeutic claims were to be believed, they should have expected to feel them. As they couldn't have been told what to expect, this could not be the result of the power of suggestion, at least not on a conscious level. Now this, you'd think, would be explosive material. A new theory of medicine, new method of diagnosis, employing radiations unknown to classical science. And everybody's shocked. It worked. Even worked on the eminent stomach of the king's own doctor. Even if they didn't understand how it worked, surely the committee should have endeavored to find out. But this would involve them in an admission of the existence of the X-Force. And as we've observed in regard to Mesmer, this is something no respectable body can ever bring itself to do if they're going to remain an orthodox body. So nothing was done at all. According to the committee, it would be premature to hazard any hypothesis, and therefore be unethical for doctors to use it. Conclusion suggesting that the medical interpretation of what's unethical must differ widely from the average individual. Now, Abrams died a few weeks after the committee condemned him. The box gradually ceased to be a Mayfair talking point, and the orthodox medical community has congratulated itself on the elimination of a tiresome and inexplicable interruption to their well-ordered lives and income streams, to be sure. But some folks wouldn't forget this mystery and individual who related this found himself next to Horder at a dinner party. He'd become Lord Horder by that point. And he said he persuaded him to talk shop and steered the conversation around to the subject of the box. And Horder made one interesting admission. He said, "I have rather a guilty conscience about what we did." Maybe he was remembering that inexplicable twitch of his own stomach. He also made mention of the fact that he was personally interested himself in raising funds to continue research into it. Unfortunately, for Horder, it was too late. He was a sick man. And before he could do anything more, he died, stricken by a coronary thrombosis. The one really vital figure in European medicine, the one man who not only had the power to enforce an inquiry, but the imagination and the generosity to abide by its findings was gone. A man who could have been a champion for the X-Force died. But the box itself didn't die. It proliferated in England and France and America, many shapes and sizes and designs, some of them quite obviously suspect, some of them inexplicable, many of them unpredictable. Among the most unpredictable of machines was that operated by Ruth Drown, who was the box chief champion in the U.S. In 1930, the American Medical Association's journal reported an investigation had been conducted at the request of some of her supporters at the University of Chicago. She was given 10 blood specimens to work on. Her diagnosis of the first three were so inaccurate that further tests were abandoned. And yet, in spite of this setback, which has been openly admitted by even the strongest supporters of the box hasn't died. In England, there are over 1,000 boxes in constant use, broadcasting treatments to 10,000 or more patients simultaneously. Now, some of the boxes are highly complicated, and some of the boxes are very simple. But the question becomes, if it works once, isn't it worth examining and understanding? Let's talk about the chart of the hidden fish. It's been described as the queerest document that anybody had ever seen. When the narrator saw the document, it was lying spread out on the desk of a charming little house in the town of Bridgeport in Dorset, been run off on a duplicating machine. A map of the British Isles, showing the areas of the North Sea, bounded by Ireland on the west and the Faroe Islands on the north, and the coast of Norway to the east and the coast of France to the south. All the same, this chart, in effect, marked buried treasure. But in this case, the treasure were fish. To be precise, shoals of herring. For over 6 weeks, according to the witnesses of the chart, it had been slowly swimming southward to warmer waters. On July 7th, it had been in the same latitude as the Norwegian coastal town of Stavanger. Traveled down at the rate of about 7 miles a day. First week of September, which was when the narrator saw him on the map, they'd passed the Dogger Bank, swimming rather more swiftly, or at a point between the 54th and 53rd latitude, about 100 miles out to sea on the English coast. According to the backstory, all these fish had transmitted their whereabouts by radionics, the X-Force. And they transmitted it from the dark waters of the North Sea to a little box. Now, when you say the fish transmitted their whereabouts, apparently it was not meant they might have done so, or that some eccentric person after breakfast of toadstools and hyena milk had twiddled a lot of dials and seen shoals of herring floating across the ceiling. The fish had actually communicated as clearly as though each of them had been personally equipped with a broadcasting apparatus. Now, this was 40 years after the death of Abrams. 40 years of thoughts, sometimes cloudy, of visions, often blurred, of claims and counterclaims. Many of the claims, absolutely ridiculous. But the box revealed another of its uses. And the fact it be used in so strange an experiment as the one that I just described suggests a range of its activities has been greatly extended. In not 40 years, a number of techniques have slowly emerged in the use of the box. Nowadays, those who practice radionics have a large body of experience on which to draw. The techniques often vary according to the individual operator, but one of them has been universally adapted because it seems to be the basis of the whole concept. It's known as the blood spot technique. If a blood spot of a patient's placed in the box, it might be the fin of a fish or even the leaf of a tree, but for the sake of simplicity, for the moment, let's confine ourselves to the blood spot of a human being. And if the thought of the patient is held very clearly in the mind of the operator, he can establish what's known as a rapport with the patient. And once this rapport is established, he can, by the process of elimination and by further techniques, correctly diagnose the patient's disability and in some cases actually correct it. Now, supposing you're watching an operator work in a box. He puts in a blood spot or a piece of human hair or a spot of dust from a fruit tree. Next thing he does is to set his dials according to the disease rates that were first established by Abrams. And since Abrams' time, the number of these rates has multiplied exceedingly. Nowadays, there are several thousand of them corresponding to all the ills of which the flesh or the mind is heir. And now comes the strangest technique of all. Having put on his blood spot and set his dials to begin his process of elimination, and holding in his mind the thought of the person, animal, or plant concerned, operator proceeds to stroke a rubber membrane that's been set into the box with a rapid movement of the fingers of his right hand. Now, when his dials are set right, in other words, when he's on the right wavelength, as it were, for a diseased condition, the rubber membrane suddenly resists and makes a clicking noise. The name given to this phenomenon is the stick. Now, the narrator claims he had seen and heard this happen many, many times. And the rubber does stick and it does make a clicking sound. And it's not connected to anything, no wires or screws or gadgets of any sort. There's no question of a mechanical trick. Now, is there the smallest reason to assume deception, voluntary or involuntary, on the part of the operator? Now, the narrator was so fascinated by this particular aspect of the box that later, in a long correspondence of questions and answers between DeLoir and himself, he asked him to enlarge on it. His comments were nothing short of illuminating. After observing, the box merely acts as a means of detecting the thought process of the operator during the diagnosis. He said at the moment of yes in the operator's mind, there's a physical change in the operator. His whole body becomes a detector. In this particular instance, in regarding to the stick, his skin does. And this is, of course, a mystery, but there are some mysteries that seem to hold a glimmer of light in the dark center, and this is one of them. The light, for a brief instant, glows more brightly, and the dial setting of the resonators in the box preset the vibrations of the detector in order to assist the energy patterns in the hand of the operator. And this aids the frictional response. The light almost flickers out again, but a faint outline remains as though you'd pushed open the door of a dark room and seen, traced on an empty wall, the shadow of the X-Force. Now, the story that I'm going to relate, because we only got a couple of minutes left, is so extraordinary for it to make its proper impact. If it's to bear the stamp of truth, you need to know something about the person involved. Her name is Miss Sanctuary, and she's the wife of Harry Sanctuary, the man who found the fish mentioned when I talked about the chart of the hidden fish. And the moment all we know about the Sanctuaries is that they live in a charming little house in Bridport, and you might well suspect that any man who indulges in such bizarre activities must be some sort of wizard or magician. And this, witnesses say, is the last description that can be found in Mr. Sanctuary. Now, to call him a successful businessman would give a false impression of a so scholarly a person. But for the purposes of our story, it's important to note that he is a businessman, a highly respected director of a commercial firm. He's in his early 60s. With a background, he might come straight out of trouble. Now, it was December 1958, according to Miss Sanctuary, that Harry was first given one of the most dramatic proofs of the sort of rapport that has been discussed in regard to the box. They were having a holiday on the west coast of Ireland, and as usual, Harry spent a large part of his time dousing in one way or another, sometimes with a pendulum, sometimes with a rod, sometimes with a box. Obviously, the box is used for the most serious experiments and need a lot of time, but he couldn't carry a box about with him on a country walk, so he puts a pendulum in his pocket. Just in case, she thought if they went to a race meeting, he'd take out his pendulum and start dousing the race card. Well, unfortunately, the story is longer than we have time left for, so we'll finish this story up tomorrow. We got plenty of week left, and I've still got a lot of stories. So until tomorrow, at this same time, this is Ken Hudnall for The Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.